Morning.
For those who can't see the projector, if you're out in your car or in the basement and you can't see it, you can check your email. Slides should be on there or on the church website, PleasantHillChurchOfChrist.org. You should be able to access it. It's a very visual lesson, so I highly encourage you to follow along if you can. And so the start of this year, my role at work changed. I was doing video production stuff for the company I worked for. And they moved me from producing videos to the social media team and creating a bunch of graphics and stuff, which I'm not a huge fan of social media, but, you know, I still enjoyed some parts of the job because I get to create graphics. And my mind's kind of been focused on art recently because I have to make all these graphics. And that got me thinking, oh, you know what? We have a lot of people in our congregation who are talented artists. Maddie's an art teacher. Randy, I have no idea how he does the murals that he does. Melanie Castro, I don't know if you know, but she ran her own art business, her own business. And I know there's more here. That's just to name a few. Got a bunch of little kids that are extremely talented. Before church, I saw them doodling on their programs. We've got some talented artists in our congregation. And that's just to name a few individuals. So this lesson is going to be a little different than my previous ones. It's going to be three kind of mini lessons looking at the styles of three artists, and hopefully I can communicate with you some important takeaways from these artists. Part one is seeing differently. There's an individual by the name of Edgar Mueller. He's a German street artist, and he gets permits to do large-scale urban art across Europe. He's one of my favorite artists growing up in high school and stuff. I tried to replicate some of this art style that he did, and I failed miserably at it, but I had a ton of fun trying. And what he would do is he would take this piece of glass, a fisheye, and he'd look through it and then create these super long lines from one specific spot, and eventually his art will create an incredible perspective. So this is just a quick little time-lapse kind of one of the works that he did. Yeah, right? Whoa. And yeah, it's kind of 3D art. And if you look at it from the side, it completely loses the illusion. It just does not look the same. And here, I want to show you a couple of his other works. They're insanely impressive. Right? It's super. I actually checked this one specifically at our house one time in Chalk. Neat stuff. And his whole thing is about perception. His goal is to wake people up to how crazy life is. The fact that we're here and alive and breathing, to get you out of the mundane mindset of just going through the actions and the motions of the day, but to stop and think and appreciate how fortunate we are to have something as simple as sidewalks to walk on. And creative work is aimed at altering perception. And one of our tasks as Christians is to help those who have not experienced Christ be able to perceive who Christ is, what he did for us, why he did it, and what needs to be done about it. And the way people encounter Christ should alter their perception of themselves and their relationships. In the Old Testament, there were individuals by the names of prophets. Now, when I say the word prophet, your mind probably immediately goes to someone who predicts the future. But that's only part of it. Probably a better definition is someone that God chose to speak on his behalf. And we have a cool story about a prophet in 1 Samuel chapter 9. In 1 Samuel 9, there's a story of a man named Saul. He's not the prophet, but you probably recognize the name Saul. He was a king, kind of butted heads with David later on. But right before he becomes king, there's the story in chapter 9 where Saul is wandering around the wilderness looking for his dad's lost donkeys. Now, I don't care who you're talking to. If anybody starts a story with, yeah, so I was walking around the wilderness looking for my lost donkey, you know this is going to be an interesting story. So he has a couple people here, and they're cruising around the wilderness looking for their animals, which being from Iowa, a lot of us can probably relate to. And he has no clue where they are. But he comes by a village, and there's a prophet nearby, and thinks, well, maybe this guy can help me. And in the middle of the story in chapter 9, the narrator, the storyteller, pauses to speak directly to you, the reader. And this is what the storyteller says. Interesting. It says in verse 9, formerly in Israel, when a man went to inquire of God, he said, come, let us go to the seer. For today's prophet was formerly called a seer. Back in the old days, they were called seers, not always called prophets. The seers are their oldest name in the Israelite tradition. So prophets by name are people who see different than what others see. That's why they go to them. So if you want to know what your friends see, you just ask them. If you want to know what your culture sees, reality television or something, if you want to get a unique and divine perception on something, you would go to a seer. They see things differently than others see. Try saying that 10 times fast. That's their roles, and they played an important part in the history of Israel. And the majority of what they wrote was poetry. When they put thoughts into words, the most fitting medium in their view was poetry, prophetic poetry. And through this poetry, they hoped that through their words, others would see differently. An example, there was the prophet Isaiah. Besides the prediction of the future Messiah being like a lamb led to the slaughter, he also wrote about things happening during his time. He lived primarily during the reign of two kings of Judah, one of the worst and one of the best kings. Bad king Ahaz, and Ahaz's son, Hezekiah, was one of the best kings. He was a righteous king. Seems weird that dad and son, completely different dynamics. But Israel and Judah were in poor condition in petty little kingdoms during that time. And some scholars even call them a rump kingdom. The whole body has been cut off and all that's left is the rump. They're not a superpower. They're minor players on the world stage at this time. And Ahaz built relationships with one of the biggest players in the world, on the world stage at that time, which was the Assyrians. And in that day, religion and politics aren't separated as they are in our culture. So getting into an alliance with other kingdoms would include adopting their gods. In one story, Ahaz goes to Syria and says, hey, that's a cool guy. Can we get it for our Yahweh and temple, our Yahweh temple in Jerusalem? And he sets up an idol next to the temple. People loved it. It was progress. That's the future. That's the way people saw it. But that's not the way that Isaiah saw it. He saw it differently, and he wrote a poem about it. And I don't have time to read it, but I highly encourage you, if you get the chance, to go read Isaiah chapter 30, verse 9 through 17. And he thinks that Israel's going down this path of sin. And he could have just said that. Hey, Israel, you're going down the path of sin. It's only a few words. But instead, he writes this whole poem. And it's loaded with metaphors. Cracked castle wall, poetry, or pottery, fireplaces, watering holes, horses, and hills, and flagpoles. And what do all these things have in common with each other? Not a whole lot, really. They're just materials that he's drawn from everyday life in Jerusalem. But the prophetic poetry of the Bible is not just a set of techniques for saying impressively what could be said otherwise. Rather, it's a particular way of seeing and imagining the world. He's just taking note on life. He pays attention to the things he sees and takes note of what other people take for granted. And in the New Testament, Jesus also talks about seeing. His disciples ask him, why do you speak to them in parables? And Jesus quotes from the prophet Isaiah. And he ends his lesson by saying, but blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For truly I say to you, many prophets and many righteous people long to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. Jesus was prepared to be misunderstood, but like every good teacher, he wants his hearers to do some of the work themselves. He wants us to not look without seeing or to hear without understanding, but to receive his word in our hearts and to open ourselves to the Holy Spirit and let him work in us to figure out what these mysterious parables and teachings of Jesus are. Part two, storytelling. These next two parts are a lot shorter, so don't worry. Two other artists are Tim Noble and Sue Webster. They're British artists. They live in London, and they're not followers of Jesus, not at all, as far as I can tell. And I honestly wouldn't recommend looking at their artwork. But one of their series that they did is really cool. The raw material that they used in their exhibit was trash from around London. They'd go around the streets of London, pick up the trash, and then they would turn that into art. So picture this. You go into a museum, and you're looking at all these cans on a table that are shot up by BBs, and you're probably like, this is literal garbage. And you're probably like, oh, those. And a few minutes later, a spotlight turns on. Look at that. The skyline of Manhattan. Tell me that's not clever. That's cool. And then you go into the next room, and once again, it's another pile of trash. But mostly fast food this time. And what are you waiting for? Like Pavlov's dogs. You're trying to figure out what's going on, what's going to happen. And sure enough, a few minutes later, the spotlight turns on. Wow. Unbelievable. How'd they do that? But then he stopped to look at the title of this piece, Wasted Youth, and realized, oh, this isn't just about being clever. Because this silhouette is of people living on the street, and I initially perceived it as trash. This is an extremely powerful message. Is this how I actually perceive people sometimes? Then you go into the third room and final room, and it's kind of some random things together. And the spotlight turns on once again. That's incredible. It's really cool. And this is called the Shadow Series, and it gained them national fame. They picked little trash off the streets of London and created these incredibly lifelike depictions of places and people. And it gets you thinking about their technique. How did they make that? But what's probably most incredible is that in just a few images, they've trained you. They've exposed an assumption that you have, and they play on that assumption that there's nothing of value. Trash. And then they reverse that assumption of you on you completely. And all of a sudden, the thing that you thought was meaningless and had no purpose has a ton of meaning and significance. Enough to get you even to think about how you perceive other human beings in your city or in your town. And it seems that what they're doing is through their medium of sculpture art is the same as storytelling. They're tapping into an important part of the human experience, and they morph it into something that when you walk away, your minds are trained to look for meaning and value. And that's what stories do. A storyteller, like a writer or novelist, will create a character or subject and place the character in a series of life events. And the cause and effect sequence chain can help you as the reader identify with that character and relate to them and the things that they're going through. And sometimes it even gets to the point that you're moved by that character. The art of storytelling is taking these moments of mundane, exhilarating, and painful experiences and seeing how they all have meaning. Stories train your mind that even the difficult parts are not random. In fact, they often play an incredibly pivotal role in shaping you and giving you purpose. Human beings are wired to have meaning. And when we don't, there are issues. I'll admit I wasn't the best reader in school. It's actually probably one of my worst subjects, but I now understand the importance of reading comprehension. Reading with understanding is critical to determine meaning. Let me reiterate that. Reading with understanding is critical to determine meaning. And the loss of reading and sharing stories has a deep effect, not just on our brains, but can it cause you to lack the skills to look for meaning in life. And most people outside this congregation grew up experiencing the Bible like Instagram. It's stories ripped completely out of context, single verses whitewashed to make them look as beautiful as possible. Presented in these snippets. Have courage. Tell the truth. Don't be bad. Yada, yada, yada. It's instant Bible. Or instant discontent. And when these kids get to adults, if they actually do go and read the Bible, they're scandalized because people leave out of their Insta Bible feed all the bad stories of immoral people. And wait, you mean the Bible isn't just a book of inspirational quotes? Be strong and courageous. I know the plans I have for you. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. What do you mean Joseph's brother sold him into slavery? What do you mean David had someone murdered and stole the guy's wife? Wait, Paul killed people? And his life got harder after he became a Christian? What do you mean? If I'm going to be a true follower of Christ, then I will endure hardship. Now, there's a huge difference about teaching people Bible stories and inviting people into the story. The neat thing is that in most cases, God takes these deeply flawed individuals in their dark and difficult moments and uses them as an avenue for good. And it comes to a resolution of Jesus taking on the burden of all deeply flawed individuals. He has this heartbreaking moment in the garden where he knows he has to die, and he's asking his Father if there's any other way. Please don't let this happen. And the Father's answer is no. Can you imagine the difficulty on both ends of that conversation? The Son asked to not have to die, and the Father says, no, you have to go through with this. This has to be done. It's the only way. Do you recognize the significance in that story? Do you see what it can do to people? Do you understand the power of that story? Can you look at these moments of exhilaration, of joy, and also stare and not ignore and forget, but to stare in the darkest, most painful moments in your life and make a decision about them that because of Jesus, I will not allow this dark moment to define me and my meaning in life. Instead, I will take joy in the life, the death, and the resurrection that Jesus gave for me. And when that story becomes the defined meaning in your life, your spotlight turns on. Part 3, Beauty and Nature. I don't even need to mention who the artist is because you already know. His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly perceived. I want to show you a few photos I took over the past few years, just on my phone, no heavy editing. Actually, I don't even think I edited these photos at all. They were just quick grab shots on my phone. And they're moments I'd like to share with you. This photo was my first camp out with Kaylee. This photo was just a fall day in my last year of living with Grandpa Lou. This was a promise from God after a church service. This was me being goofy on a day trip to Colorado Springs with my date, Kaylee. I took this photo on her phone. Of course, it's probably the best one, quality-wise. The one that I didn't take. This was a photo out the window that I took on the day that I proposed to Kaylee. This was the beach for our honeymoon in San Diego. And on one of the first evenings, and this last one is one of the first evenings in our rental duplex. Now, I'm not trying to brag about my photography skills in the least, but these are low-quality, quick-grab photos. But they're still beautiful. And that's not because of my work. Each of these photos are beautiful to me because of the story behind them. They're beautiful to me because they remind me of the beauty of God's creation. And no matter how beautiful a photo looks, it doesn't capture the feeling of being there in the moment, experiencing it. Jason and Teresa, you were out in the Grand Canyon. Does that compare to a photo of the Grand Canyon? Being there, seeing it, looking at it, feeling the wind, feeling, just experiencing things is so much different than looking at a picture. And many artists try to recreate the beauty of God's kingdom and creation, and I'm not saying that's bad. There's some really visually appealing pieces. I love Bob Ross's. They're cool. But it will never beat the real thing. And the crazy thing is that we have as humans have only scratched the surface. They landed a rover on Mars a week or two ago and got back some really cool images. But how many galaxies are there out there? There are so many things that we as human beings cannot even begin to grasp. And the beautiful thing is that we have the ability to think about these things. That we have the ability to appreciate these things, and that we have the ability to experience these things. I just showed you a few pictures of landscapes, creation. I didn't even get into the beauty of the animals that God created. Even more impressive, humans. Have you ever seen pictures scaled up of the tiny little details of cells and atoms, and even DNA strands twisted, like, that's beautiful. That's incredible. And we need to give credit where credit is due. So as I was skimming back to find some photos to throw on here, the last thing that brought an even bigger smile to my face than these moments as I was reflecting on them were pictures of moments of individuals that I know when they decided to give their life to Christ in baptism. It may not look like this awe-inspiring light coming down from heaven, but that's because what's beautiful is the change that's happening inside. The beautiful thing is happening inside of you. And the scripture says, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. And that's a wonderful, beautiful thing to think about. So if you feel ready to stop living your old way, and we'd like to make that happen, we invite you, as we stand and sing the invitation song.